Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're talking about the issue of homelessness on this weekend show. We're pleased to be joined in studio by Tamara Dockstader, who is the Housing Resources Director for ATCA, as well as ATCA Executive Director Raj Rambab. Tamara, I'll pose the next question to you. You know, what is are some would you say are kind of the misconceptions you would say are out in the community in regards to the homeless population?
I think the largest one that I get is they want to be there. Why are we trying to help people that want to be there? And when you hear their stories, and that's probably a huge take back from this pit count, is I asked the volunteers to ask their stories, see if they'll talk to you. And it was amazing of how many people were either resolved to it at this point in time, no pun intended, I'm going to be homeless the rest of my life. I just don't care. But that is at this point. At one point, they did care. They figure that they have exhausted every effort of trying to get out of where they're at. Many people will say they're just drunks. They're just on drugs. They're just criminals. So those are the takebacks I get. But according to my volunteers with this pit count, they said, all of them said, we don't want to be here. We've got to get our family out of here. And a lot of people think it's just maybe mainly a male population problem, and it's just really not. Like Raj mentioned earlier, the number of families out there, when you tell people that there's kids out there in tents with their parents, I had a soaking wet family come into my office when the rain happened, when it snowed a few weeks back, and she says, can you help us at all? They were soaked, five of them, in a tent. And people like to turn a blind eye to that particular population. And that's, so I would say that's they want to be there is what I mostly get.
I do hear that from time to time that, a lot of the homeless people want to be homeless. You know, is that a very small fraction? Are there a few out there?
That I've spent a lot of time with folks that are homeless, and that little phrase just drives me nuts. And there are times when we are, you know, we're resigned to something, even though we don't want to be resigned to it. We'll begin to use language that gives us some kind of power, even though it's not something we want. And most folks that you talk with who've been living outside for a while are kind of resigned. They've tried and they've been beaten. And so rather than say, no, you know, I'd rather be somewhere else, but I just can't get my stuff together, it's a little more empowering for one to say, well, yeah, this is fine with me. I'm happy out here. And, you know, we make the best of our circumstances. But I'll tell you, just to give you a quick example, there was a gentleman I spent a lot of time with. And again, I'm talking, I've shared sandwiches behind dumpsters. I've slept in shelters as a volunteer in the same room with folks that are there for services for several hundred nights. So have some really good anecdotal information. And this one gentleman, you know, after building some trust, he shared his story, and he was a hardware store manager at a fairly large retail establishment. His wife and daughters were doing well, you know, middle class, the home, couple of cars, and the wife and daughters were killed in a car accident. And his mental state declined pretty rapidly, and he just couldn't get to work. Lost his job, lost his home, and his grief and depression over that tragedy never fully healed. And there weren't services in place to do something for him in ways that he could have really used. It was a lot of outpatient stuff. So that's a huge loss all the way around. I mean, it's a monumental tragedy. And then we as a community failed him because we couldn't help restore this person, who was a very valuable contributing member to the community, back to that place where he's a retail manager, supervising employees, and able to contribute in that same way. And there's story after story after story like that. And that's one that happened later in life. A lot of the stories you hear happen as a result of trauma in young childhood that there was no proper treatment or awareness around. And that young person grew into an adult who was broken in many ways. So the idea that people want to be homeless, I think, is something we tell ourselves to absolve ourselves from the responsibility of caring for people who are suffering.
Once people become homeless, too, and they no longer have maybe a regular shower, they don't have a home mailing address, is it difficult to get out of that when they really want to work or they want to find a job to get out of homelessness?
Yeah, you know, mailing address, a phone number, all those things that you need to put on an application or an online right. application are pretty essential. But those are things we work with people on at ATCA. We can help receive phone calls. We can help with receiving mail and connecting with folks. And there are other agencies in the community that do the very same thing. But I think one of the important relationships that I think we as service providers and the community at large hasn't done a good job of is working with employers to help them understand the art of re-engaging someone who's been out of work for a long time back into the workplace and some of the hurdles that it takes. You know, I think we approach it as, well, I'm going to give somebody a chance, I'm going to give them a job, and, well, it was 2 weeks and they just screwed up and they couldn't handle it, so I can't afford that anymore. And I get that from a business owner's perspective, but I think we can do a better job of equipping our employers with strategies around rehabilitating folks into the workplace to be very effective and contributing staff members. But it takes some nuance, and it takes some patience, and it takes some training and contact that's a little bit deeper and more complicated than just equipping the person to do the specific job that they're hired for.
I'll throw out another one of those phrases that sometimes gets thrown about, and I'd like to hear your response to this one, just the idea of sometimes you hear if you have more homelessness, it equals more crime. Is that a misperception as well?
Homelessness does not equal crime. We have criminals all over the place. I think the most dangerous criminals are usually ones with pretty decent bank accounts and houses and cars to drive. I think maybe the least dangerous criminals in many ways are the folks that have no material resources. And in my experience, my personal experience, I've actually found some of the kindest, most thoughtful people are the ones that I've run into in shelters, you know, behind dumpsters, and listen to their stories. And my wife, who's also been involved with homelessness for a long time, she made the comment to me once. She goes, you know, if they were a little more ruthless, they'd probably be really successful. But because they're so kind and empathetic and they feel so much, it sometimes renders them incapable of doing the run-of-the-mill day-to-day work. And it's interesting how we, as a society, will reward and almost worship ruthlessness in the business world, but ruthlessness on the survival level we somehow look down upon. And I think that's an interesting thing we ought to be discussing a little bit more.
Is it difficult to get past those misperceptions about homelessness?
Sure. You can't change someone's mind for them. You just can't. They, you know, hopefully they will put themselves in circumstances where they'll have their eyes open, they'll have their hearts broken, and they'll actually see people as people, not as statistics or as a label.
How big of an aspect is, you know, mental health illness? You talked a little bit about that topic, but, you know, drugs and alcohol as well. Do you see that a lot with homeless population?
Sure. I mean, how many people do we know that, again, have good bank accounts, nice houses that medicate themselves? I mean, really, you know, I've been to some houses where, you know, they've got a better collection than the liquor store that I go to on occasion. So I think medicating oneself to make it through the day is not unique to the homeless population. It does exist in the homeless population. And, you know, mental illness is also a problem in many ways. I mean, in the 80s, residential mental facilities were decimated. And people, I lived in Washington, D.C. at the time, and people were just literally put out on the street and didn't get the care that they needed, and the homeless population spiked. And we haven't rebuilt that infrastructure to care for folks who really do need residential, supervised mental health care and services. And then you get folks like the person I was talking about, who was a manager at a large retail establishment, had a family, and so on. And his immediate mental health crisis, emotional health crisis at that the loss of his family, there were no immediate interventions. And then when you're outside, his mental issues just grew over time. And his self-medication strategy was alcohol and a lot of it. And he knew it didn't work. No one needed to tell him that. But he was just trying to get by.
Yeah, I think your stories really strike home, those firsthand accounts. You know, do you talk much to the people who, you know, have the children out that are homeless? Because I imagine that's just got to be so challenging with students in school, potentially, and sure, trying to get through life.
Right. We're lucky enough to have a family shelter, and we will capture some of those families. And like Raj said, we work very hard to try to help them get jobs. There's a lot of support in the community with people that will give them an outfit to go to their job interview. We keep clothing on hand that are business type clothing so people can go get jobs. Sometimes when you, it's been often said, give a hand up, not a handout. And when you give a handout up to somebody that has nothing, it's huge for them. And the fact that they can shelter, they don't have to worry about their kids, and they've got their kids back in school. So many of these kids are truant for so many life cycles. They're very behind once they get in school. That's just part of that process. And people don't want to believe that there's families out there, entire families. That's something, that blanket, they want to be there. Again, just, it makes them not accountable for being part of the solution to how we can change that.
Homeless, oh, go ahead, Raj.
Well, yeah, in the Bay Area, I worked exclusively with homeless families. And the issues, I mean, and not just the homeless, but anyone who's in poverty. And the majority of our homeless in this country are the working poor. The vast majority are working poor. And one of the things we did as a board was we asked folks to document what their week was like, almost, you know, in 10-minute increments. And we learned very quickly that the hurdles around things like transportation, getting their kids to and from school when most of it was on public transit. And even in the Bay Area, where there's quite a bit more public transit available than in Tuolumne County, it was monumental. I mean, what would take any of us with the car 15 minutes to do took, on average, 2 hours for a family without a car in the Bay Area. So some of these things that many of us take for granted and just figure, well, you know, the stuff is here. Why can't people figure it out? A lot of people are trying, but it's very difficult to perform it at the level as those of us that are better equipped with vehicles, decent health, stability, et cetera. And so not that we can fix all those things immediately, but we ought to be more thoughtful and deliberate about giving consideration to those dynamics.
I think a lot of people, too, when you think of the homeless population, most people kind of associate it with bigger cities. Homeless populations tend to grow in bigger cities as opposed to the rural areas. Is this kind of a newer thing to see a larger rural homeless population?
Yes and no. The homeless have been in rural communities forever. But all the statistics and data is showing that the wave of homelessness is going to be heading to rural communities. You know, we get to a point where there, you know, if you can't access basic services, you will wander to somewhere that does. So that's a dynamic that's still unfolding. I don't think it's really hit us yet, but I do think it's on the way. And that will be a real learning curve for all of us, those of us that are in service provision, those of us that are in law enforcement, healthcare, and our elected officials are going to have to really do a lot of learning to figure out how to cope, because most of our current homeless are homegrown. You know, they're ours. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say. We've got a lot of interesting times coming.
A few weeks ago in Sacramento, there was a press conference about the passage of a group of bills aimed at kind of getting funding for affordable housing and homeless programs. Are you optimistic that money is going to be trickling down into our local communities here at some point?
Optimistic? No. Not that I don't believe it'll happen, but you know, so much of this is just luck, because there's a lot of good applicants, and once those funds become available, I think we will be a good applicant. And you know, what creates just the right mix for the deciding panel to say this is a project we're going to fund over this other very worthy project, you know, I don't know. I do think we will be a good applicant. When the funds do become available, we will be an applicant. But and I think we'll be as good as anyone else in our similar type setting. But it's a real guessing game to know who will get funds for those projects and who won't.
Do you know at this point what types of projects that could fund? I mean, does the state given different guidelines?
Not yet. I mean, I do know that the affordable housing arena is one that is building up some equity at the state level. But we haven't been clued in just yet, or at least I'm not aware of it just yet, on what the specific targets are and what, if any, regions have been lifted up over other regions and how the point system is going to work.
Back to the issue of misperceptions, we talked about a number of things. Any other things that you think that are out there that are kind of, you know, not completely accurate when people often think of the homeless population?
That's a long list, man.
They mentioned at this conference that I was at, they said oftentimes people want to go, well, what's the solution? And they said, if you have 3,000 people, you have 3,000 solutions. And that's true, because everybody's situation is different. Their needs are different. Their level of mental illness may be different. In that PIT count across the country, one-third admit to having a diagnosed mental illness. Now, that's a lot of a very large homeless population, which California, our burden is 22% of the country's total population is in California, and it grew 19% from 2015 to 2017. So in 2 years, we saw a 19% jump in the homeless population based on that January PIT count.
That's a lot of people.
A lot of people.
Need to take one more break. We'll pick up on this conversation in just a minute. We're joined in the studio this weekend by ATCA Executive Director Raj Rambab, as well as ATCA's Housing Resources Director Tamara Dockstader. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. And a reminder that next week on Motherlode Views, we'll be joined in studio by the new forest supervisor for the Stanislaus National Forest, Jason Kiken, will be joining us in studio. Again, we'll return with our final segment focused on homelessness in just a minute.